what we're seeing in China now is not just a capacity boom, but a difficult transition from building at speed to making a new energy system actually work.
Welcome to this IBA Global Insight podcast. Amid the fossil fuel shock resulting from the conflict in the Middle East, China released its latest five-year plan, reaffirming support for the country's clean energy transition. It follows China's landmark pledge to reduce its economy-wide net greenhouse gas emissions by 7 to 10% by 2035. The pledge marked the first time China had committed to an absolute emissions target and stands in stark contrast to the position of the US, another significant emitter, whose President Donald Trump has pledged to boost oil and gas drilling and has rolled back green initiatives in an effort to unleash American energy. Yehua Yang, a partner at Thornhill Legal in London, discusses the challenges ahead for the country.
And China's clean energy story is often told in extremes. On the one hand, the world's biggest emitter. On the other hand, the world's largest builder of renewables. The reality is more complex and more interesting, actually. What we're seeing in China now is not just a capacity boom, but a difficult transition from building at speed to making a new energy system actually work. So the challenges, despite massive clean energy investment, China's biggest challenge today is no longer how fast you can build wind and solar, is whether the energy system can absorb them efficiently and safely. If we look at the grid itself, a smarter grid isn't just about hardware. It needs better data, better forecasting, and better analysis to manage the variability in real time, especially as distributed solar, EV charging, and flexible demand expand. So the economic pressure cuts both ways. It can slow parts of the transition, inevitably sometimes, but it also makes green investment one of the most credible ways to stabilize growth. Whether China hits its 2035 target depends on how fast these green drivers can offset declining traditional sectors like the property market, some conventional manufacturing. So we hope those green drivers can do their jobs. And hopefully, as a whole, they're not adversarial to each other, but actually can be the drivers and hit the target in time. If you look at only the number, critics are right. It's below what many 1.5 Celsius pathways would suggest. But China doesn't see this as a standalone figure. It sees it as part of a longer trajectory. The early phase is about building the new system, renewables, grids, storage, electrification, so emissions can fall faster later without destabilizing energy security or the industrial base. So the real test isn't the headline percentage alone by itself, it's whether China's emissions curve actually bends downwards. The number is only meaningful if the system underneath it make a faster cut possible after 2035. We hope that's the case.
Christoph Wang, director of the Griffith Asia Institute in Brisbane, highlights that economic opportunities are a significant driver in China's green transition.
In Europe, we partly missed a lot of economic opportunities because we underestimated China, particularly around the green energy transition. I've been working with the Europeans, for the Europeans in China, trying to convince the Chinese that there's a huge economic opportunity for greening its economy, because it's going to unleash in the transport sector and the energy sector, it's going to unleash all these opportunities. And we've been preaching all about this, but then failed to innovate at scale. And now kind of we're all surprised in Europe and in other countries that we lost a lot of our industry capacity and now kind of paddling back. So we're not benefiting enough from this green transition as we were hoping, because in some ways we tried to convince the Chinese that they need to lead the way, and now they're doing it, and now we're a little bit frustrated. Now, what's interesting is that particularly in the energy transition, we're actually saving cost. So it is much more expensive to produce energy, particularly if you build new energy plants through fossil fuel than through renewable energy. The fact that there's an absolute emission target is good. I don't think it's so surprising in the sense that I think we've been hoping for absolute emission targets for a while. And it's, I think it's also not surprising because it seems achievable. And I think for China, the importance is that things are achievable as much as possible, particularly also in the climate space. So it seems that the notion that there's a 7 to 10% reduction from China, it's a good start. And I think the hope is that there will be an overachievement in this regard, so similar to what we're seeing already to other pledges that have been made around COP, such as the boost of renewable energy power. There was obviously a clear overachievement from China.
The impact of China's clean energy strategy evidently extends beyond its own borders, not only in its projects and investments worldwide, but also in its influence. This is Selwyn Hart, Special Advisor to the UN Secretary General on Climate Action, in a recent interview with China's Southern Finance Omnimedia Corporation.
Many countries are now redefining energy security as not having access to a commodity, coal, oil, or gas, but they're seeing energy security as being able to produce homegrown renewable energy. And China has been an example of that. So we really need China to continue to serve as that model and example for other developing countries.
Avirup Nag, a partner at Saraf & Partners in New Delhi, considers the reliance of India on China for its own green energy transition.
The solar industry in India is highly susceptible to any disruption from China. Of late, India has been pushing local manufacturing of not just modules but cells and for its solar industries, and it has put some regulatory requirements for domestic content, and there are production linked incentives being given for solar manufacturing. But you know, the capacity, well, there has been a significant addition to production capacity in India, but it's still way short of meeting the local requirement, let alone trying to export it. So the solar industry is significantly linked to or dependent on Chinese equipment. There's a PLI scheme which has been implemented by the government. So effectively, you get projects allocated linked to your production in capacity. And those projects have to be made with the domestic content, a domestic module. So there is a push towards that. And the government introduced the basic customs duty on solar modules from China and Vietnam and certain other countries to kind of de-incentivize the import and bring certain parity between the prices.
Beyond Asia, China has invested significantly in clean energy infrastructure in Africa. Yang considers the impact of its pledge for overseas energy investment.
Africa has also become one of China's most fast-growing solar markets, which reflects both China's needs to scale its renewables industry globally and Africa's own priorities. More than 660 million people still need electricity, and in many cases, solar or often combined with storage and microgrids are simply cheaper and faster than fossil power. So fossil investment won't disappear overnight, but China's climate pledge is clearly pushing its overseas energy engagement toward clean power as a default. So the big picture is this. China's clean energy story is no longer about speed alone. It's about systems, sequencing, and credibility at home and abroad. Whether it succeeds will matter not just for China's climate goals, But for global energy markets and the pace of the world's transition as a whole.
Since returning to office, President Trump has withdrawn the US from climate instruments such as the Paris Agreement. This presents another opportunity for China to step up on the world stage, as Wang and Nag explain.
I think there are reasons to believe that A, China stays course on what it's doing already. Because it makes sense for the Chinese economies. The Chinese economy is increasingly reliant on the green industries. And so staying course on this doubles down on a really rapid industry development over the last years. So I think that's a clear economic interest. And then I would not be surprised if there's also a global power competition contest. So who's on the right side of history, and with the US withdrawing from all of the climate commitments versus China that is actually providing sensible, to an extent ambitious and or not ambitious, climate commitments and being able to actually back that up provides a really important counter narrative.
See, I think there's no doubt. I think there has been a bit of a hit to the US image about how what the stability of the regulatory framework is going to be, right? Because there's been major shifts in policy terms under a Biden administration and a Trump administration. Not something probably the world was used to. While dealing with the US, there was always some form of continuity and the signs of a mature democracy. But honestly, I think how that will impact rest of the world, I think, you know, it kind of depends on their, for example, for India, it will depend on the Indian political and economic realities as to how closely we are aligned with the Paris goals, right? Because and it will get driven by the ground realities here, given, you know, renewable is a necessity for India as opposed to a luxury, I would say.